All right, guys and gals, take your Bible. Join me in the Song of Solomon, chapter 2, verse 15, in your manual. On page 23, perhaps my funnest title of anything I ever do when it comes to marriage and family, Men Are From Earth, Women Are From Earth, so deal with it. Song of Solomon 2:15. Of course, you know what I'm doing here. I'm playing off of a book that made a man named John Gray an overnight millionaire because he wrote the book Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. And he became a millionaire and a household name because his book struck a chord. And that is simply this: men and women are different. We look at life differently. We think differently. We're wired emotionally in a different kind of a way. But his thesis is incorrect, because men are not from Mars and women are not from Venus. Now, we're all from planet Earth. And when we get married now, we live in the same house. We sleep in the same bed, unless we're being bad, and then we get to sleep on the couch. We share the same closet, and we try to navigate the same bathroom. And you find out what life is really like when you get up close and personal like that. And here's what we discover. Marriages that get in trouble are marriages that don't make it. Most of the time, at least at the beginning, it may lead to a big thing like an adultery or an affair, but they usually get in trouble over little things. Little things that then become big things. And it's what Solomon calls in this text, little foxes. So look at it with me, 2:15. Catch us the foxes, the little foxes that can spoil the vines, for our vines do have tender grapes. Now you say, what does that mean? He is using the analogy of a vineyard for marriage. And what he's saying is marriage is like a vineyard in that a vineyard has to be tended and toiled in. You have to work it and you have to protect it. Well, in ancient Israel, we know that foxes, in fact, they still are, but in ancient Israel in particular, foxes were fond of grapes. Now, if you happen to be a student of foxes, you know that, one, they're small, they're quick, three, they're slow. They don't come out during the day. They come out at night. Come, no one's around when you can't see them, and what happens is they would get into the vineyards and they would eat the grapes so that you would come back later at harvest time, and to your disappointment and horror, there'd be nothing there because the little foxes had gotten in and destroyed the vineyards. And what Solomon is saying is that's how marriage is. Little things, little foxes get in and eat away and do great damage. And so what I want to do in this session is talk about some of the more common little foxes that you and I need to be on guard against in our marriages. And some I'll move through quickly, others I'll slow down for just a bit. But number one, what I call the fox of gender confusion and abuse. Your marriage will get in trouble when God's role for the husband and the wife is reversed or abused. Reversed. Folks, God made men to be husbands and fathers. And God made women to be wives and mothers. And no one is as good at doing those things as men being husbands and fathers and women being wives and mothers. And if those roles get reversed, your marriage gets in trouble. Men in particular today are just bombarded with the culture and the society trying to tell us, for example, that we need to get in touch with our feminine side. Well, guys, we don't have a feminine side. We don't. God made us masculine creatures. God made our wives feminine creatures. And we need to, all of us, rejoice and thank Him for what He made us. Men should rejoice in their masculinity. And men need to be men. They don't need to be, you know, in the two extremes, a knuckle-dragging Neanderthal, nor do they need to be a Pee Wee Herman. I mean, a woman is not impressed with either one. And so we need to be strong, masculine men who are also godly men, who then can be very strong and very approachable, very convictional, but also very gentle. Those things are not mutually exclusive. So we can't let these things get reversed, but we can't also let them get abused. And again, God has called us, we men, God's called us to the leadership assignment. But guys, He's called us to be servants. He's called us to be shepherds. You know, even in conservative marriages, conservative churches, some guys get this confused. Some guys treat their wives like they're less than human. I can still remember a few years ago in a Bible college where we had a women's fellowship day. Great day. women come to class, child care provided, chapel service just for the women, luncheon for the ladies, had a wonderful OBGYN come in and speak to the ladies. It just went great. But because it went so great, we went a little long, about 10 minutes past when we were going to stop. One of my students comes to the back door like that one right there, gets his wife's attention by doing this. She turned blood red in the face, started crying, got her stuff together, scurried out of the room. Now, I want to tell you something. That guy is not a godly man. He's a jerk. He is a first-class jerk. By the way, God is good. He was in my 8 o'clock class the next morning. Now, let me also preface, because I'm not a big fella, but sitting right over here on the first row was my brother-in-law, who is a former undercover drug detective in Atlanta. He is 6'1". He weighs 275 pounds. He has a 54-inch barreled chest. He has benched 505, squatted more than 700. He's a beast. And he likes to fight, too. Praise God, he's now a pastor in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, but he also was on the Red Dog team at one time in Atlanta, and so anyway, he's sitting there, so I've got my back. He's got my back. So I just said, look, yesterday one of you came into my luncheon, snapped your fingers and thumbed your wife out of the room, and you are a jerk. You're just a slime ball. And I want to tell you something, you need to go downstairs to the registrar's office, withdraw, and go home. Because I don't want you graduating from our school. I don't want our diploma on your wall. In fact, I don't want you in the ministry. I wouldn't want you to be my pastor. I wouldn't want you to be my minister. And it's clear that you're a disaster as a husband and probably a disaster as a father. And if you don't like what I just said, I'll be right here after class. And if you want to take me on and I can't whoop your tail, my brother-in-law will take you out. So come on. You say, did he come on? No. He left the school. I don't know whatever happened to him. I fear what happened in terms of his marriage and his family, because godly men do not snap their fingers at their wives. Godly men do not embarrass their wives, or godly women don't embarrass their husbands in public. You just don't do it. You may chew his tail out in the privacy of your home. I've had a few of those. In fact, I've had quite a few of those. But she does not embarrass me in public, because she would not abuse that relationship that we share as husband and wife. All right, secondly, the fox of intimacy, stagnation, your marriage will get in trouble when initial sensual love fails to develop into true intimacy. You see, when we first get married, we are pretty much getting married on emotional attraction, aren't we? And let's just be honest, when I got married, did I love Charlotte? Yes, I loved her as well as a 21-year-old can love anything. And I'm not trying to denigrate you young folks that are here, but the fact of the matter is, you don't really understand it yet. I mean, I look back. Let me say it again. Did I love her then? Yep. Do I love her today? Oh, yeah. In fact, what I have to say is, when we got married, I loved her. But today, I really, 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 really love her. I did not know that this kind of love exists. I just didn't. I couldn't. I was not capable of that at that time. Now, here's my point. Emotional sensual attraction is enough to get you started. In fact, it's how most of us do get started. Let's just be honest. Now, again, we like other things as well, but we like that part too. But that will not get you to the finish line. It just won't. So what has to happen to prevent intimacy stagnation? I alluded to it a while ago. Two words ought to be written by number two, and the two words are this: best friends. Best friends. And if you become best friends in your marriage, that initial intimacy will both get broader and it will grow deeper. And you will experience an intimacy that you never even imagined existed when you first got married. And so nothing is more crucial to that than coming to be each other's best friends. Charlotte and I, still to this day, we pick at each other, we cut up with each other, we wrestle with each other, we laugh with each other. We, you know, and our boys, when they were growing up, they would watch mom and dad picking and playing with each other all the time, and they, you know, they'd like little kids, oh, why don't y'all stop doing that? But then they're watching, and they didn't want us to stop doing that, because that, again, let them know, my dad loves my mom loves my dad, and they're going to be here for me. And that blesses children, and it also blesses your relationship as well. Number three, the fox of poor communication. Your marriage will get in trouble when it is not being nourished by regular and genuine communication. There's a man named John Gottman. Anybody ever heard of him, read any of his books? He's not a Christian. He is a Jewish man, lives on the West Coast, Washington State. But he's probably done more research in watching couples interact. In fact, they had a thing, they used to call it the Love Lab, but what a name. But back to what they would do is they'd bring men and women in, they would hook them all up, and then they would watch them talk. And they would give them, most of these couples were having issues, and so they would watch them interact with each other. And he wrote a book, and in that book, he identifies, after all this massive research, what he calls the four horsemen of the apocalypse that destroy marriages. The four horsemen of the apocalypse that destroy marriages, and all four of them are related to communication. You say, what are they? Write them down. Silence, stonewalling, criticism, contempt. Silence, stonewalling, criticism, contempt. Silence, you won't talk. Stonewalling. You've got an issue in your marriage that is problematic, and you've deceived yourself into thinking, well, if we just ignore it, it'll what? It'll go away. No, it won't. No, it won't. In fact, it will not only not go away, it'll get worse. So you don't talk, or you put it off. Criticism. You have what I call a partly cloudy disposition with thunderstorms on the horizon. And you always see not the positive in your mate, but the negative. In fact, another study that I saw used this analogy. Marriages that survive and thrive, they look at each other with rose-tinted glasses. They just give their mate, in fact, this is a million-dollar word of advice, they give their mate the benefit of the doubt. They start not guilty. They start, he had a good reason for doing that. She had her reasons for making that decision, and you start there. And amazingly, in fact, again, for us, it was a great day in our marriage when we both decided that we would give each other the freedom to do things differently. To do things differently. In other words, I stopped thinking, well, I know my way is best. And Charlotte stopped thinking, well, I know. No, we just, they're different. It's not really that one was right, one was wrong. They're just different. If you live right here, let's say you lived right here, and you wanted to go, down the street to, you want to go to Old Charlie's. We'll just pick on that one. There are two ways to go, aren't there? You can go down 1A, hook it there at the Walmart red light, snake your way back in there, and you're there. Or you can go down 98 under the bridge, get on US-1, hook it up that way, turn it up there at the Steak and Shake, Old Charlie's, turn right there. Now, which one is right and which one is wrong? Now, if you think, oh, this one's right because you're a dingbat. They both get you there, don't they? Isn't that your goal? Now, maybe you're like me and it's got to be quick. Well, we ain't going through all them dang red lights. We're getting down there, and as soon as I hook that left under that bridge, that accelerator is cooking up. By the time I hit the top of that ramp, I'm not going to tell you what we're normally at, but there's usually a 6 or a 7 in the front, and then I'm out there. I mean, that's just, you know, again, my wife picks at me about the fact that I have made multiple contributions to multiple states in terms of their road construction and maintenance. I am in double digits, and in fact, the front digit now is a 2. So you say, I've had easily 20 tickets in my lifetime. And I know some of you, I've never had one. Well, I hope God judges you. So anyway, think I'm supposed to praise you for that. You're those folks that come down that hill up there at 35 miles an hour. And I mean, my blood pressure, I'm like, I know. You say, well, you're sinning. I'm working on it, okay? I realize I have need of sanctification, but 35 miles an hour, I can almost run that at 52. So we got to do something about that, all right? So my point is, one's not right, one's not wrong. They're just different. They're just different. And so instead of criticizing, just give them the freedom to do things differently as long as it doesn't involve sin, all right? But the most critical of all, according to Gottman, is contempt. And in fact, he points out in his research that if your marriage, or if any marriage, is being afflicted by contempt, with a 95% accuracy, he has predicted that those marriages usually don't last. Because you see, contempt may not even be verbal language, it may be body language. It's where you look at your mate and you fold your arms and you tilt your head and you go, pfft. And what you're saying is, what you think and how you act is just so despicable, I'm not even going to fight with you. I'm not even going to respond. You see, those of you that do counseling and those of you that will do counseling, you will understand this. If a couple comes to see you and they're still fighting, there's hope. There's hope because they care enough to fight. If they come in and just sit there with no emotion, no feelings, that glassy look, you've got real issues. You've got real problems because they are almost at the point of no return because they now don't care. And so communication is so crucial to the health of our marriages, which means two things. One, yes, you are good at expressing yourself, but two, and here's the missing art in our day and time, you're also good at listening. You're also good at listening, all right? Number four, the thoughts of time ill spent. Your marriage will get in trouble when forces or persons outside the marriage encroach on that all-important time the two of you need alone to build and maintain a healthy relationship. Now, let me interject. Sometimes being alone gives you that opportunity, but you don't take advantage of it. And sometimes when it's just the two of you, like in the early days of marriage, you learn some things that, well, let's put it this way. You'll do some things early in marriage that you wouldn't do later. How do you know? Oh, I'll tell you how I know. We were living in Dallas. We've been married maybe, oh, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. One Saturday night, Charlotte puts on the table some sandwiches that looked really good. And then she dropped down this Tupperware. And people that give us Tupperware before we get married, they should be judged by God. I mean, you get all this plastic stuff that you never really use or use half of it, not the other half. But anyway, we get this big Tupperware thing that she puts on the table. And when you open it up, if you had the assistance of a magnifying glass, you might think what was in there was a potato chip. But they were so crumbled up and so stale, you were not sure that it was anything other than newfangled chewing gum. So I said, honey, I don't want these. They're too small and stale, and I'd like to have some big, fresh potato chips. Well, when we first got married, for whatever reason, she got over it, but when we first got married, she was the queen of frugality. I mean, she was just frugal about everything. I mean, just pinched every penny, preserved everything. You know, this is who she was. So she says, well, sweetheart, when these are gone, you can have some others. Well, that was not at all the response that I was looking for. And so I came back and I said, well, I came by the pantry on the way in here. And I saw in there a brand new big old bag of Lay's potato chips that have never been opened. And I'd like to have those. And she said, well, like I said, Sugar Dumpling, when this container's empty, you can have those. And so I did something a man would only do in his first year of marriage. I stood up and I took her Tupperware thing and I dumped those potato chips in her kitchen floor. Well, I know, ladies, easy, easy, easy. Back. I know. I know. Such a man ought to die. I know. But I dumped them in the floor and I said, this one's empty now. You can go get the other ones. Can you believe that she would not go get the other ones? In fact, she went do a number of things for quite a while, as best I remember. And so I came to understand, yeah, you have that up close and personal time, and it may be good, it may be bad. It depends how you take advantage of it. But now, let me move in a different direction. The fox of time ill spent. I think the most valuable commodity that you and I have in this day and age is time. That's my own opinion, but I think you'd agree. Even in an economy like this, we can all find a way to make money. I mean, we can work extra jobs. It may not be the job we want to work, but we can find ways to make more money. But none of us can make more time. In fact, we're just as rich as Bill Gates when it comes to time. So when you spend it over here, you don't get to spend it anywhere. Once it's spent, it's gone. And furthermore, especially for those of us who are serious about Christ and those of you that are going to be in some type of vocational ministry, you're going to have all sorts of demands on your time. I mean, massive. And you're going to have to learn to say no to some good things that you might say yes to the best things. You hear me? Good things. Wonderful things. No, I can't come to that. No, I can't do that. Why? Because I have this to do. God blessed us with the four sons. They were all really good athletes. In fact, Nathan played Division I basketball at Murray State for 3 years. The other three were MVPs in football and basketball in high school. Tim today is a football coach in Istanbul. Paul's a basketball instructor in Nairobi. And so we went to lots of ball games. In fact, when the twins were seniors, when we lived in Louisville, we had two 12th graders, a 9th grader, and an 8th grader. Charlotte and I attended 72 basketball games between November the 25th and February the 28th. 72 basketball games. That is a NCAA season doubled, okay? That's an NBA season minus 10 games, not counting the playoffs. So that's a boatload of basketball games. And we saw 95% of those games. In fact, the only ones we missed were when there were two games at the same time in different places, which meant Dad went to one, Mom went to the other. You say, do you look back and say, man, that was a waste of time? No. Because when Timothy, my youngest, was in the 12th grade and he lost a playoff game at Eastern High School in Louisville, when the buzzer went off and that game ended, it hit me just like that. You have just watched the last high school basketball game you will ever see one of your kids play in for the rest of your life. They're gone. Now, those of you that are young, that don't have kids yet, or they're very small, I'm just telling you, you're going to blink, and they're going to be gone. So you need to take control of your life and your schedule and maintain it. In fact, the way it really came home to me was when I first went to Southern, well, I've been there a couple of years, Nathan and Jonathan had a basketball game one night, and it overlapped with our trustee meeting. Well, the meeting was coming to an end. We were having dinner, which I thought about skipping out on, but I went ahead and stayed and hung out with our trustees, just being, you know, a good administrator. And I was about to leave to go watch the twins play their basketball game when Dr. Moeller, one of my very best friends, said, look, the executive committee is going to have a quick meeting, and I need you to be in there. Now, I said, well, now, Al, I said, my boys have a basketball game in 1 hour, and I don't want to miss that. And he said, well, it's only going to be 30 minutes. And I said, you never have 30-minute meetings. And he doesn't. And I said, are you sure I need to be in there? And I need you to be there. I said, all right. So I go in, and sure enough, that meeting lasts an hour and a half. I leave the meeting. I will not tell you how fast I drove to the gym. Walk in. Tom Rayner, who's now at Lifeway, we're best of friends. He's got three sons. We have our four. They overlap. So they all played football and basketball together for years. I walk into the gym, and Tom Rayner walks over and says, quote, well, you missed it. You missed it. And I said, well, what did I miss? My son Nathan had scored 37 points in three quarters. He had hit 11 of 14 threes. He's a great shooter. Just that night, you know, he's in the zone. He could throw it up, you know, over his head from half court, and it went in. He just had one of those games. And I missed it. I missed it. So the next day, without any manipulation or anger or arrogance, I don't think, I went to Dr. Moeller and I said, Al, last night, you and I made a huge mistake. A huge mistake. And I shared with him what happened. And I said, here's the deal. Here's the deal. If what I do here at Southern is going to require me to ever miss something like that again, then I will go upstairs and I will be glad to write you a letter of resignation as the Vice President for Academic Administration and the Dean of the school. I said, I'll stay and teach. You can cut my salary by whatever it needs to be cut, but that's not going to happen again because I missed what will clearly be my son's greatest basketball game, and I was in a meeting that I did not need to be in that was a waste of my time, and it was a bad investment of my time too. To his credit, he said, you're right, and I don't need you to go resign. In the future, I promise you that won't ever happen again. And he kept his word. And there were a number of times where we had issues at Southern Seminary that it would have been good if I were there. But my boys had either a football game or a basketball game, and I went to the football game, and I went to the basketball game, and I have no regrets. No regrets. In fact, during those years, I would try to get their sports calendars as quickly as I could, their schedules. And I would write in all those games. And if I had a conflict, let's say, for example, I'd agreed to come to your church to do something, I would call the pastor and say, look, I'd like to reschedule. I would explain to them why. And again, not one time did I have a pastor say, no, I want you to keep that date. I'm sorry you'll miss your kids' ball game. I never had a pastor do that. Now, I have had a couple times over the years where people have come up to me and said, you know, I want to ask you a question. Do you really think you made a spiritual decision? Do you really think it was more spiritual for you to go watch your kids play ball than for you to go to that church and speak? And I don't even hesitate. Yeah. I think the spiritual decision was for me to be a daddy. I said, I have no false humility here. There are lots of people who can come to your church and preach. And there are. And they'll do a better job than I would do. But there's one man in the world who can be Charlotte's husband and can be Nathan and Jonathan and Paul and Timothy's daddy. That's me. And if their daddy's not there, then their daddy's not there. Now, for those of you that are ministry, private word, and I'll move on. You go to a church on the front end in a kind, gracious, but firm way. You say to the folks, now, folks, let me tell you, if I come to be your pastor, if I come to serve on your staff, I will go to my kids' ball games. I will go to my kids' band concerts. I will go to my kids' ballets, God forbid. I will go to the various things that my kids do. Hear me. I will take a vacation. I will take a day off and spend time with my wife. And I will not come to every function that the church does. I'm just not going to do that. The fact of the matter is, you don't. You go watch your kids play ball. You go watch your kids in the band. You go watch your kids do ballet. You go to those kinds of things. And so, you know what? For me to be a good husband and a good daddy, I'm going to get all those things too. And no apologies. No guilt. And that means I don't come to every Sunday school party. I don't attend every committee meeting. In fact, God, the more committees you can kill, the better. Get rid of those things. And just, but the ones that you don't need to go to, don't go to them. Just don't go to them. Double up on Sundays and Wednesdays. Have your deacons meetings on Sundays. In fact, when I was at a church, not again trying to sound haughty, but we would have Monday deacons meetings. And I just let them know, guys, during the fall at 8:45, I'm leaving. Because my boys and I always watch Monday night football together. Now, if you want to stay till midnight and talk about how much toilet paper we need to buy and what kind of paper towels we need to get and who's going to trim the bushes, God bless you. You just have at it. You just have at it. I ain't staying. In fact, what I would do if I were the pastor, I'd move the deacon's meetings to Sunday and say, I work all day Sunday, so we'll just knock it all out on Sunday. Although I'd probably do it if you have the evening service like at 7, or no, not 7, God forbid, 6 o'clock, have the deacon's meeting at 5. Guess what? You got to be through at 5:45. You got to be through by 5:50. So, I mean, somebody's got to go in there and preach. And then you cut those things out. So, you know, just again, without being mean, ugly, haughty, arrogant, prideful, take control of your schedule, because if you don't, somebody else will. All right? Number five, the fox of outside interference. Your marriage will get in trouble when real and personal needs are being met more and more outside the marriage. Now, brothers and sisters, this is the one that opens the door to adultery, to infidelity. And to help you out here, if you look over on page 24 very quickly, I've given you at the top there, and you need to keep this close at hand. Guys, you need to share this with your men. Ladies, you need to share this with women. There are warning signs that infidelity or adultery is lurking in your neighborhood. I'll just go through these very quickly, make a comment about them. Number one, that feeling of going through the marriage motions. You become bored with your marriage. It's kind of become a routine. And here's what happens, even sometimes in ministers, but this is what happens with your people. They think, you know what, I'm not happy. And I have the right to be happy. And he or she's not making me happy, but that one over there could. And so they think that they then are justified in leaving this person for another person. And what you have to help your people understand is this. Now hear me. When you're talking to people who claim to know Jesus and claim to love Christ, they have got to understand you don't have the right to be happy. Brothers and sisters, you come find that for me. You come show it to me. It's not in there. Now, what you do have the right, the responsibility to do is be holy, be godly, and be obedient. Now, I discovered that when I am obedient, I have joy. Joy is better than happy. It's deeper, it's richer. But your people will deceive themselves into thinking, I have the right to be happy, and I'm convinced this person will do a better job. And so they think about walking away. Secondly, inventing excuses to visit someone of the opposite sex. Three, increasing male-female contacts in normal environments like work, choir, recreation. Four, being preoccupied with thoughts about another person, something that only you and God, by the way, may know. Say, oh, no, I can't, I'd figure it. No, you wouldn't. I have a friend, I have no doubt that he was telling me the truth, that was in bondage to pornography for more than 40 years, and he said, my wife doesn't know. I said, are you sure? He said, I guarantee you. I mean, I guarantee you she doesn't know. By the way, he was a PhD professor in a seminary. 40 years in bondage, and wept in my office like a baby. But it had just gotten a hold of him, and yet only he and God knew. Until what happened was, at our school where I was, like at this school, you're on our server. And so we can, like, take my office. My guys can go upstairs, and they can go in, and they can see anything and everything that has come in or that I've tried to go to. And unfortunately, with this person, we found just a string over weeks and weeks and weeks when we did a spot check of his going to pornographic sites. You can deceive your mate. You can't deceive yourself. Well, you can deceive yourself, but you can't deceive God. Number five, exchanging of gifts with a friend of the opposite sex. Number six, making daily, weekly contact with someone by phone. Number seven, putting yourself in a situation where a friend or employee might become more. Number eight, having to touch, embrace, or glance at a person of the opposite sex. Number nine, spending time alone with anyone of the opposite sex. Number 10, inordinate time on the internet. Let me work backwards. For men, well, for women too, but for men, this can involve pornography. For women, but also obviously it's got to be men too. This is where a lot of folks enter into these chat rooms and begin an affair via the internet. You say, well, how do you prevent that? Well, there are a number of things you do. Number one, you keep your computer in a public place where anybody anytime can walk up and see what you're doing. Number two, you put yourself in accountability so that especially if you're a man and you've had issues with pornography, get every safety device on that thing, and then you enter into an accountability where you have another man who's monitoring everything that you see. If that doesn't work, like the movie Fireproof, take that computer, walk outside, and throw it in the trash can. If that's what you have to do, then that's what you have to do. Quick word to you parents, don't you dare let your kids have a computer in their bedroom that they seal off from you. Now, that'd be unlikely for most of you because I think most of you would be a little bit tougher, but I'm amazed at how some parents will let their kids just get away with murder. Well, it's their room. The heck it is. It's your room. It's my room. I told my boys growing up, here's the deal, guys. You know I love you. You know I care about you. But here's the deal. You live in my house. You drink my water. You breathe my air. You use my electricity. You sleep in my bed. In fact, when you leave the house, I will let you take your clothes because they don't fit me, though I bought all of them. But everything else, it's staying here. It's staying here. Why? Because it is mine. And so don't you ever get the idea that that's your, it's not your room, it's my room that I'm letting you borrow. You shut that door and I can't get in, it's coming down. And if I have to, I will knock you on your butt in Jesus' name because I love you. But this is not a democracy. This is a dictatorship. And I'm the dictator. Now, hopefully for you, you say you didn't, I said all this. You go ask me, I'll bring Nathan over here to tell you exactly how I said it. Hopefully it will be a benevolent dictatorship. That will depend upon you. But if it does require, I can be malevolent. I can be an evil dictator. But this is not your, people say, well, I want to be my children's friend. You need to be their parent. You can be their friend later, but you need to be their dad. You need to be their mom. And so this is an area, again, now with the cell phones and the texting, and, you, of course, you know, the big thing now is sexting, where you got these young girls and guys too, but girls putting nude photos of themselves and shooting them to their boyfriend that they put on their cell phone. And as of right now, that's sex trafficking, and it's a criminal offense in many states. Now, I just saw, of course, we can always count on the Northeast. They are now trying to pass some laws that will make it not a crime anymore, because right now, it's a criminal act. It's interstate pornography. And so you can go to jail for it, even if you're 12 years old. And so that's a big thing. So, again, you know, of course, I'm not sure a 12-year-old needs a cell phone. That's a whole other issue for another day. I'm past that, so I don't have a right to really speak to it in one way. I just say you got to be a responsible parent, and you got to be a responsible adult, and the Internet can be a great tool or it can be a horrible thing, all right? Spending time alone with anyone of the opposite sex, I've already dealt with that. Touching, embracing, or glancing at a person of the opposite sex, I'm a huggy person, but I know how to touch and how not to touch. I know how to hug and not hug. You should know the same. You say, number six, making daily, weekly contact with someone by phone. You never call a woman on the phone just to talk or, you know, get, no. No. I talk to the women that are in my office about office matters. Outside of that, I guess every now and then, I talk to my sister. Back when my mother was alive, she called me her prodigal son because I just didn't call very often. And I should have, and I feel bad about it. I do. I regret that because she's gone. And I did better in the last few years, but I should have done better all my life. But my bottom line is, no, there are no women in my life like that, none. There never will be. My inner circle, men. Innermost circle, Charlotte. She's the only woman I will pick up the phone and call and say, honey, we need to talk about something. You say, gifts. You don't buy gifts for women? Nope. Well, I bet Kim and Debbie in your office hate your guts. No, I think they like me okay. Because here's what happens. When it comes to Secretary's Day, their birthday, or Christmas, Charlotte goes and picks out the gift, and I pay for it. That's our deal. I provide the funds, and she gets the gift. Furthermore, usually on those particular dates, she takes them over here to the tea room. I ain't never going to no tea room, okay? And if one of you guys asked me to go to the tea room, we need to have a talk. There's some issues that need to be dealt with here, okay? So, well, I'm not even going to the tea room with some guys, much less with some girls. No, I'm not doing it. In fact, I don't take women out for lunch, dinner, breakfast. I don't do it. I just don't do it. And again, accuse me of being a Neanderthal, accuse me of being a sexist, accuse me of having psychosexual hang-ups. I don't care. My goal is to go to my grave faithful to my wife. All right, very quickly, we'll take our last break. Number six, the fox of fatigue. Marriage will get in trouble if the wedding vows are considered conditional. Marriage no longer, I'm sorry, back to page 23, marriage no longer a sacred covenant before God, and divorce begins to be considered as a possible solution to an unhappy situation. Now, let me speak to you guys that are in ministry, but all of us as well. This is an area where we need to be, listen to me now, we need to be both prophetic and pastoral. Prophetic and pastoral. We need to be both prophetic and redemptive. I can say it that way as well. You say, what do you mean? You need to help your people understand that God, and we need to understand that God has not changed His mind. God hates divorce. It's in Malachi. He hates it. He despises it. He loathes it. He does not like it. God is against divorce. He just is. Word's clear. Now, that means you need to help your young people growing up to understand that outside of trusting Jesus, this will be the most important decision they'll ever make. And therefore, if you're pastoring a church, you don't marry anybody without premarital counseling, extensive premarital counseling. They say, well, they're not going to do it, then you're not going to marry them. I don't care if it's the chairman of the deacon's daughter. I don't give a rip. You tell them on the front end. I reserve the right to not marry anybody. And that's just the way it's going to be. And certainly, if they don't do it and meet my specifications and my expectations, then I'm not participating. So graciously, kindly, but firmly, let them know on the front end, all right? But also help them understand God really means this to be for life. He really does. So we hold high the standard of monogamy and lifelong marriage. So there you're prophetic, all right? But on the other end, be pastoral and be redemptive. Help people understand who've gone through the sorrow and the hurt and the pain of divorce. Number one, God forgives. And number two, God heals. And so help them understand, I'm not throwing a rock at you. Let's take this group today. There's no one in this room who can do anything about your past. You can't. Your past is done. It's gone. You can't change that. But you can affect your present and your future. So again, you can be redemptive. You can be pastoral. You can be loving. But you can hold high the standard of monogamy for life between a man and a woman and help them understand that the fox of fatigue should not even be an option for a believer. Finally, the fox of misunderstanding. Your marriage will get in trouble if the man and woman fail to understand, appreciate, and enjoy just how really different they are from one another. Now, I'll not take the time to walk you through it, but on page 25, if you look over there for just a moment, I list for you a number of areas, communication, romance, needs, self-worth, time, and parenting, where men and women are really, really different. But I'll close this session by just giving you a very simple analogy that I've had lots of fun with through the years. And one day, it just came to me. I don't know how, where, but one day as I was thinking about it, it just came into my mind. This difference thing can be explained in this very simple way. Men are like dogs, and women are like cats. And if you just get the dog-cat thing, you've got the whole difference thing down. You say, what do you mean by that? Well, just think with me for a moment. What is required to have a happy dog? Three things and only three things. You feed him, you play with him, and you praise him. And you do that, and you have got a happy dog. A number of you that have been here for a while know that we had this beautiful, elegant, black Great Dane named Samantha, who was with us for 10.5 years, and we had to put her down in December. We cried. I cried. Charlotte cried. Nathan cried. I mean, we were pathetic because she was just wonderful. And we fed her. We played with her. We praised her. Man, that dog wasn't going anywhere. In fact, that big old Dane would lay over on her back, and we'd scratch her big old tummy and that tail. Boom, boom, boom. And she just thought she was in dog heaven. And so, you know, she was content. Well, ladies, what is required to have a happy man? Just three things. You feed him. You play with him. And you praise him. You just a sweet, cute little husband. He might turn and let you scratch his tummy, too. I don't know. He's your husband. Okay, you know, I don't know. But now, guys, stay with me. This is worth the whole day. Your wife is not like a dog. She's like a cat. You see, you're in a room one day, and you look over there, and there's a cat. And it's eyeballing you. And you see it, and you're not really sure what to do, so you just kind of stand still and hold your ground, and here it comes. And can you believe it? It starts rubbing up against your leg and purring. And so you bend over, and you pick it up, and you scratch its little head and rub it, and it keeps purring. And you put it down, and it runs out of the room, and you say, man, that was a nice cat. That was a sweet cat. But 30 seconds later, that same cat appears in the door again. You look at it, it looks at you, and suddenly, without any provocation, it jumps for your face and tries to claw your eyeballs out. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Same cat. Something happened in the other room, and its disposition has been radically, radically altered. Now, you say, well, so you're married to a cat. Oh, yeah, I'm married to a cat. Well, how do you manage a cat? You don't manage a cat. You just try to live with it and survive. I mean, manage a cat? Have you lost your mind? No, you just simply say, you know, that's a cat. Boy, they're entertaining. They're never the same 2 days in a row. They just do some interesting stuff that I would never, you know, I could have thought about that particular thing 1,000 years, and I would have never done it that way. But that cat did. Okay. Wasn't anything sinful, just different, just cat being a cat. And so I realized that I crawl in bed every night with a cat. I share a bathroom with a cat. I live in a house with a cat. And by the way, they do shed hair like a cat, okay? They shed hair. I mean, I have deposited hair in countries that Charlotte's never been to. Find it in my toothbrush. Find it in my bag. I mean, it's just like that big line. It just goes everywhere. And so they and the cats, it's just their way of letting you know they've been there and they're watching you. So that's fine. That's fine. I can live with that because here's what I've discovered. We are better together than we would be apart. We are better together than we would ever be apart. And so the difference thing, rather than becoming an irritant, I look at it and rejoice in it as a blessing. All right. Quarter after, this time, because we need to finish at noon, 10 minutes.